What I am is the Indian who can't die. I'm the worst dream America ever had.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all of the internet's most popular books and letting you know whether or not you should take time out of your busy schedule to give them a read. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. And today we are reading The Buffalo Hunter Hunter by Stephen Graham Jones. This is a horror novel that's gotten a lot of hype recently. And it's told mostly through journal entries. Part of the book that's in the past and part of the book that's in the present. And we're kind of following along to see how, well, they're connected through a journal that is discovered. And then the journal tells a story about a vampire and Native relations, as, you know, Native Americans were, you know, being killed and driven out of the U.S. And so anyway, that's kind of a terrible summary, but I'm trying not to spoil anything. And what you need to know is that it's mostly told through journal entries. And the main character is a pastor who is taking the confession of this Native American man and kind of learning his story. And it's all building up to this sort of horrible, horrific crescendo because of the pastor's past.
Yeah. And it's taking place
post. Great, great granddaughter gets dragged into it.
Yeah. It's post Civil War, right around the time when a lot of the Native American population was being kicked off their lands into reservations as we expanded westward because Manifest Destiny and all of that bullshittery.
I mean, it's called Buffalo Hunter Hunter.
You
can see between the lines a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the olden times is 1912 and the modern times is like roughly 2012. So those are the dates.
Yep. But part of the story is in like the 1870s told by the Native American man.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a little confusing.
It is.
That's actually a good teaser. Okay. Did you guys get reviews from the internet?
I did. And I don't know if Casey got this one too, but I thought it was funny. And I thought that it kind of proved the point of the book a bit. So it's a 1-star review from Goodreads. And it says, DNF, I gave up because the writing style rambled like your uncle after 2 beers and no point. And I'm like, yeah, that's Arthur Bocarin for you.
Yeah, I do like that review and I did see it, but it's not one of mine today. Caitlin, do you want to go next? I have a handful.
I found one. I don't know. I don't love the wording of it, but it fits. It's 1.75 stars, and it says, this book drifts into wordy tangents like a war veteran on their deathbed. How can it call itself a horror story? It's more like a cure for insomnia.
Oh, damn. Okay. So here's my handful. Some of these were just random, like the reviews for this book in general were very long, but in my searching for a funny one, I ended up stumbling onto some really like random funny ones in the Goodreads archive. So this is a 1-star review. It says, this review is only for Brandy. This was by far the worst book I read in 2025. And if you decide to read it, you're an effing loser.
That's so random.
Why is this man called out Brandy?
I don't know. I was like, who is
Brandy? Did you read the book?
Brandy, are you okay? Brandy, did you like the book? I always just thought that was so random and funny. I was like, I can't believe I'm like reading this. Okay, this next one I picked because it summarizes my own thoughts a little bit better. And then I have one that I think is the funniest I've seen. So this is a 3-star. It says, not since the Heaven and Earth grocery store have I had such a hard time giving a star value to a book. I picked it up due to the fact that it was on so many best of 2025 lists. Did I enjoy reading it? No. Was it hard to read? Yes. Horror is not my thing. How many ways can one person be sliced and diced and still not die? Yet I would label it as one of the most powerful books I've read. I was like, Wow. Whirlwind.
We have Red Heaven and Earth Grocery Store for the podcast, so you can listen to that one too. And I feel like we have similarly complex feelings to this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Reviewer about probably both.
Mm-hmm. Right. Then my final one, this is like my review holy grail. It's 4 stars. And it says, and sometimes the horror is just the white people we meet along the way.
I mean,
yes.
But I did scroll further as you were talking, and I found a 1 star that said, the scariest part of this book was knowing I had to finish it.
Yeah.
Yep. And sometimes your podcast girls, when we have to finish books as much as we can.
Sometimes we really are just doing it for y'all.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this has been a very, become a very lauded book, I think. The overall Goodreads rating is 3.98 out of 5. The Fable rating is 4 out of 5. And the Storygraph rating is 4.2 out of 5. What did you guys think?
I didn't actually look at anyone's reviews. Yeah, no, I'm going to be surprised, guys. I just finished it like 10 minutes before this episode, and I gave it 3 stars. It was too long. At first, I was like, am I stupid? Because I did not understand it. I don't know. It got interesting. I liked the, you know, white people aren't the hero story, the culture part of it. But also, like, to be true horror, I'm not sure it deserved the ending it got either.
Mm.
So, I don't know. 3 stars. I'm not mad I read it, but I'm not going to recommend it to a ton of people.
I think that's fair. I can go next. I gave it 4 stars. I would say I ended up really liking it. However, I was sort of like an unwilling captive along most of the journey. Like, this book for me was really, really hard to get into. And I hated Etsy, who's like the modern day protagonist. Genuinely could not stand her. Every single paragraph and chapter written from her perspective made me want to just immediately DNF the book. And she's not necessarily supposed to be a heroine. I don't think she's necessarily supposed to be likable, but it was so hard for me to read from her perspective. And the book is confusing. It's written in a confusing way. It sort of mimics old-timey language. And I thought the first 50% of the book was pretty boring. Like, the first whole half of the book is really hard to get into. I would kind of compare it to Jane Eyre. It's like very gothic in the sense that it takes a long time to build. And then like sort of there's comes a point where shit just hits the fan and everything's crazy. And I ultimately liked the book so much because I thought it had really strong folklore elements. And at a certain point, I was really pulled into the story and was very invested in learning what happened mostly to Goodstab. He was, you know, clearly the most interesting one. And so, yeah, I got pulled in. I ended up being really invested. The overall story arc I really liked, but like, this is not an easy book to read.
Yeah, I was very conflicted with my star rating because I had very similar issues as you two, where it took me a really long time to like finish it. And it required a lot of like mental energy and audiobook listening to do. Which I would recommend the audiobook because they do the journal entries in the video, like audio journal entries, like as if it is someone talking into an audio recorder. It's really cool. They do a really good job with like 3 different voice actors for the 3 different characters. I landed on giving it a 4, but it's a really weak 4 because I'm pretty close to like a 3.5 is probably what I would be like the most generous of. And that's only because it's a really long book. I've never been good with gore. That's just who I am. Horror and gore are never my genre.
Okay, so trigger warning. I don't even mind gore, and this was gory. Okay.
Yeah, it's bad. And so, like, I want to preface, like, any of my reviews is, like, this book was not written for me. So I'm terrible with this kind of book. I like don't do gore, especially when it comes to animal gore. That's where I have a lot of problems because I really hate when animals are abused and killed. And there's a lot of that in this book. But it is a very interesting story. It's the character of Goodstab is very, very complex and interesting. And this idea of him confessing to this man and him being kind of forced into a villain role is very like culturally interesting. And I thought the ending was very fascinating, but it did take me a while to get into. So it's going to be probably like a 3.5 for me.
I feel like this is a recent theme for us is stories about oppression, where the purpose of the book is really partly to examine how the oppressed kind of become villains in fighting their own oppression. I feel like a last handful of like especially fantasy books have been touching on that. Anyway, I thought I might be the highest anyway because I love horror. I'm the horror fan here. But I, outside of gore, I feel like this is more like gothic west than horror, except for there are some parts that are extremely gruesome.
We haven't read a lot of horror for the podcast. Mm-hmm. And some of what we have, like I'm saying very little, I don't know, this is probably like the most close to actual horror we've maybe gotten. The other ones have also been weird Western historical ones.
Yes, I was like true. Lone women, yeah. Anyone? Yeah.
Mexico.
Also yeah. Montana. Yeah. Something about that old West.
The West is spooky, especially when cultures collide.
I mean, there were like no rules. Like it actually feels like it was kind of a scary time. I'm sure it made sense to them, but yeah. Okay. Is the book more plot or character driven? I would say definitely plot. It's just that the plot isn't like super important until pretty far into the book.
Yeah. Like the first half is character, the second half is plot. I don't know.
Yeah. It's really
plot, because you're retelling it.
Yeah. It's a retelling of like a historical issue. So yeah, it's plot, but like the character is a very like intense character that influences the plot.
Yeah. Cause it's like ultimately a revenge narrative. And I think revenge is almost always plot because it's normally about one person figuring out how to exact revenge, which yeah. is sort of what happens in this book.
Sort of.
Have you or would you read other books by the author? The same author wrote Only Good Indians, which also got a fair amount of hype a few years ago and is a horror story.
He's written a wide variety of things. Mm-hmm. I was reading through, like, even comics and stuff. Zombie books. I don't know. He's got an interesting repertoire. I've not read anything else by him. He has a book called Zombie Bake Off, by the way.
Yeah.
All right.
I did see in the reviews that it is typical for him to have a bit of a meandering style. And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would pick up another. Like I said, not mad I read it, but it was definitely not my favorite style of book.
Right. Like, I would rather read a different book, probably.
Yeah, like it's not my first choice. I'll keep an open mind. Like if another book really piques my interest and I have an interest in reading another horror book, which is not my choice most of the time. It's mostly
y'all
for this
know
podcast.
I'm trying to read fantasy, okay?
Yes, I want my smutty fantasy. Let's be clear.
I need a dark daddy with a witty mouth, you know? That would not be this book.
No.
No. Though you could definitely argue there are some dark daddies.
Lord.
Not in the maybe, way I like, guys. Not in the way I like.
Maybe dark fathers. Lord. Okay. How was the pacing of the book? We've already kind of alluded to.
Meandering.
How long did it take you to read? Yeah.
I don't know. It took me, I had a week to read it and I did it. Okay.
Same.
I'm not saying it wasn't hard. Like I said at the beginning, I felt stupid because it went from the meandering ramblings of Etsy straight into Arthur's POV, which is written in weird old timey. The easiest parts to understand were the Native American man's, and he wasn't even using English words half the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you had to guess what he was talking about animal wise.
And it was usually pretty well implied.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were the easiest parts to read and the parts I looked forward to most instead of what's his butt talking about whatever he ate that day.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. I could not.
Anyway, so I would like fly through those chapters, but not the others. And then you go back to Etsy and you're like, what? So I wouldn't say it's a consistent pace.
Yeah.
Not my favorite.
The pacing of this book was tough. And I feel like the only thing that gives me pause in criticizing it is I do feel like what he's done is very gothic.
Yeah. I don't think I like gothic.
Right. And I like gothic. It's just that, like, it's still a slow paced book. And I probably would have just DNF'd it if it wasn't for the podcast.
I thought about it genuinely.
Yeah. I did like the book. I ended up giving it 4 stars. Like, I'm really glad that I finished it. And there were parts of it I really enjoyed, but I would not have made it through this book without.
It was like 20% then, 20% in. I was like, do I care? And finally it picked up. So I'm glad. Sometimes I'm glad the podcast encourages me to keep reading these books. Because like I said, I'm glad I read it. But it didn't draw me in quickly.
No, I agree. I would have DNF'd if I didn't have the deadline of this podcast to read it. Because I was thinking as I was reading, I was like, I could be reading one of my fantasy books I just bought. I could be.
I have the new Heather Fawcett book, the Emily Wilde author book sitting here. I just want to read the cat one.
Yes. I just bought that one too. So yes, I want to read that book. But at the same time, like getting out of our comfort zones and reading books that are not always what we would like gravitate towards or pick up is really important. And I'm ultimately glad I finished it because I think it's an interesting story. And I ultimately gave it kind of a high star rating. But at the same time, Arthur made me want to bash my head through a wall.
Yeah, if I had picked this book up like at a bookstore out in the wild, I guarantee you I would have picked it up, read the description, been really intrigued, opened the flap to read the first page and put it right back down. but again, I had one of my English teachers tell me once that not everything in reading is about enjoying. It's about learning. And I do feel like I was thoroughly educated by this book and I'm glad I finished it. So, but in answer to the question, the pacing is brutal. Okay. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
No. God, no. I don't want to see that.
Yeah. I was thinking this was written like a great horror movie.
Yeah.
Do I watch horror movies ever? No.
For me, I would love to see this movie. Like, I love horror. I would love to see some of the events that are like super fantastical happened later in the book on screen. Yes, it is, you know, an incredibly bloody plot. Like, I would think of someone like Quentin Tarantino or something doing this, like something a little bit flashy and violent.
Oh, yeah.
But I would definitely buy a ticket.
You'll be going alone.
Yeah.
No. That's okay.
You could not pay me to watch this.
Once again, trigger warnings.
Yeah.
Like so many.
I mean,
this filling is out the part on StoryGraph where you select the, like the warnings. I was like, oh, so like
everything all
of them except homophobia.
Yeah.
And only because there wasn't time.
No, there wasn't time. Also, if we think about it, this book is about cannibalism. So it's just another cannibalism book that we have read for this podcast.
I mean, are vampires cannibals or are they human?
They're cannibals.
No meat was consumed.
Only blood. Okay. Anyway.
They weren't eating, they were drinking.
It's true. Also, is he really human? Is he not? Who knows? The only thing we know is that he's Pecuni. So do you guys have your busy girl ratings?
Yes. I think I'm going to knock mine down to a 3. Actually, maybe not, because even Caitlin made a face and I'm like, it's a very soft 3 because it's not for everyone. It's going to be a 2, actually. I'm going to be real honest. Me and horror just don't get along. So this book is really not for everybody. It's not a busy girl's book either, because Lord Almighty, is it long and meandering, like we said. So you kind of have to have a lot of brain power and time to really digest this book.
Yeah.
Okay, too. Also, but I almost feel that's generous, but also like I said, I'm not mad I read it. So I'll stick with a 2, but like, wow. Yeah. Like, it's not a like read and do other things activity, you know, just kind of like off and on, pick up, put down. It's like a hold on, I need to think a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, not a busy girl's book.
Sometimes I don't know where this comes from. Maybe I should talk about it with my therapist. But sometimes when I'm reading, I get like this like pop, like this thought pops into my head. And I'm like, what if I had kids right now? I feel like it's because
I think about this too. I do. I was babysitting and I was like, no way.
Yeah. Like, I feel like it's something in like doing this podcast has trained me to like think about like busyness and like, what if I was like being distracted right now? If I was a mom, I don't think there's any way in hell I could finish this book. Like, it just can't be read with distractions around you.
Can you imagine a toddler coming up to you? Is like, what are you reading? What are you reading?
You're like in the middle of like trying to figure out what a dirty face is. And you're like, ugh. Yeah. So I wanted to give it a 3 because I enjoyed it, but I'm also going to give it a 2 because realistically it was really hard to get through. Not to keep comparing it to like the classics, other classics, but I feel like it's like Jane Austen, right? Like, it's worth reading, but you know, it's long and it's not fast paced.
A little more Bronte-esque, but
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, that we all agree, not the best busy girl's book, but has a lot to talk about. So This is where we give you our spoiler alert warning. We are going to now spoil everything and talk about it all. So if you're planning to read the book, this is where you pause and come back later. But we're going to get on with the rest. So the first question, it's kind of one we were already like teasing to, but what did you think of the story structure with diary entries from multiple time periods and characters? And one of the diary entries is a telling of past from a character.
So I feel that one of my biggest gripes with this story is I don't know that we needed Etsy at all.
I was literally thinking this.
Yeah. She,
I understand the horror part of it, but no.
Right. Like, I think the book could have been done and wrapped up differently because I really liked like the back 50% of the book. I was a lot more into it. But mm-hmm. then it's like you get to the kind of crescendo with Goodstab and Arthur. And then you're like, oh, and there's 20% left in the book still. What the hell? And it was like, I just didn't feel like we needed any of Etsy's like weird fumblings around with what to do and with her grandfather. Like, I think the author could have written a spectacular end simply using the appropriate time period.
I agree.
Yeah. I think it was supposed to bring in the idea of like generational trauma and generational fault, guilt, stuff like that. But at the same time, I agree. Etsy was quite a lot of a character. And by the time, like, it was like literally at 80% is when you switch to 2013 and never leave. And I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it is horrifying, the idea that Good Stab turns Arthur into a vampire, because that's like the worst possible thing he could have done. Because like, you're now making him immortal and making him feel the guilt and what he done, and really think about what he done for all eternity, and then turns him into a prairie dog. That's crazy.
Yeah. I did like, so something I really liked in the book is that sort of body horror element that gets brought in, of actually like becoming something else based on what you eat. Like, I really loved the reimagining of vampires and what it meant to be a vampire in the book. I thought that was really interesting. So I thought it was kind of brilliant that that's what Good Stab does to him. I also did not expect that, so I was surprised by it. I just feel like it could have been sort of like summed up, like you could have gotten the same point that you got with Etsy with just like a little bit longer of an epilogue. Like, we didn't really need the whole tortured PhD student stuff. Like, I just felt like she was kind of unnecessary, and it made the book longer than it needed to be when it was already kind of long.
Also, why was he 6 feet tall? I thought the whole point is you'd like become
the thing. Yeah, just become a little tiny prairie dog.
That's what he made it sound like. You become a little mouse or a little fish. I don't know. That was confusing to me. Also, like I said, just on the pacing comment with the diaries, like, I flew through Good Stab sections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actively hated Etsy sections and just like didn't understand like the Arthur sections. I was like, please, what is happening? I don't know. He was talking about food and dogs so much. So like
Cordelia,
not even between the ones. Like, Good Stab was obviously the most interesting one. And because he's going through this change, this trying to stay himself when he's clearly not himself, and the only way to stay himself is to like consume his own people. Like, that was interesting.
Yes.
The guy eating cake was not.
Yeah. Every one of Arthur's chapters, I was like, just like, bro. And then he was just like meandering on down to talk to the local alcoholics. And I was like, oh my God, Arthur, you're so insufferable.
It was really only interesting when he was talking about like the people turning up dead. I feel like that was important to the story. Mm-hmm. But you could have done it some other way, probably. I don't know.
You definitely could have.
It was definitely supposed to sort of like increase the tension and like lead up, make it make more sense when Arthur was so afraid, right? And we know that Good Stab is going to exact revenge upon him.
Well, first person totally is like more tense, you know? So first person was important. But
I also did think, like, ever since Good Stab showed up, we understand that he's the one responsible for the humps. So I felt like it also just didn't totally work as a driver of tension, because like,
we didn't
know, it was very obvious.
I didn't read any of the like anything about this book. I just kept seeing it and seeing it and was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And then when I got there and I was like, vampires. Like, well,
I will say I liked the vampires only because I think it's a different take on a vampire. It's not your traditional take on a vampire. And I did like the idea, although the sentence or the motto in my head that kept popping up whenever like you would consume something is, you are what you eat.
Yeah.
Like, that's a crazy thing to be popping up right now in my head.
Honestly, it did not pop in my head, but like, that is the summary of this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the idea on the book jacket, the Buffalo Hunter Hunter, you are what you eat.
Yeah, no, that's literally everything. Like, my elementary school brain was just kept turning back to that. But I thought that was interesting, is that like, if you're consuming animal blood, then you will become an animal. If you consume like white people blood, you're going to become closer to a white person. I thought that was very interesting, like the Nabi Kwan idea, him eating Nabi Kwans because he didn't want to eat his own people. And then he starts getting a beard, and that's like causes a cultural identity crisis. And I thought that was really, really interesting. And I liked the Catman. I thought he was an interesting character that came back around. I did not totally expect him to come back from a bullet wound separating his body.
I thought we said goodbye to him.
Yeah.
And that's where at the end, I'm like, okay, you killed your grandfather, but like, did you?
Probably yeah. not.
Well, that's kind of how I felt. I was like, is he dead? Like, maybe he's not like, I mean, it kind of poses the question, like, what is death? Because maybe he's not dead, but also maybe he can't re-person himself. Like, you know, like maybe he just exists in the flat plane. We have no idea. But I did like the vampire stuff too, because, you know, like we've said, it kind of gets at these like important cultural things about like what makes you who you are, what makes you from the culture you're from, how do you, you know, honor who you are and where you're from.
Yeah, I did look up just to verify. While the author is a Texas man through and through, yeah, he is a member of the Blackfeet Indian tribe in Montana. So there's definitely some really important cultural anecdotes here that are authentic.
Yes.
Well, and I'll mention that the massacre, the Marias massacre, did happen. That is an actual thing that happened in history, that an estimated like over 200 Native Americans of the Blackfeet tribe were killed by U.S. soldiers in Montana.
Well, and I'm sure to an extent, some of it's based off him growing up probably in a mostly white community, trying to remain within his culture. You know, I think people who leave their homelands or have their homelands taken over by intruders could all relate to that aspect of the book.
Yep. Okay, what do you think of the setting? This is not our first book that we're reading set in desolate settler era Montana.
No, Lone Women. Two horror books.
Yeah. I gotta say, I really like
being like vampires, sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right, yeah.
I must say, I feel like this niche has wormed its way into my heart. I'm finding that I really enjoy the kind of pioneer horror.
Is that a new genre? Pioneer horror?
Pioneer horror.
You know, maybe it's all us kids who grew up on Laura Ingalls Wilder and Little House on the Prairie, and then like Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
I mean, Oregon Trail is a depressing game. Yeah. You died of dysentery.
Our generation has a weird fascination with
and the Donner Party
on the plains. Yeah, yeah. The Donner Party. I did go on my way to visit Donner Pass when I was in college.
Yeah, I want to see that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I do think like this era of history has been passed over for war stories. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe it's just because I'm not a huge historical fiction buff, but I enjoy seeing this era kind of pulled back up, because I think there are a lot of really important political things happening in this region during that time. So it's been interesting to see it, you know, given some new life, especially in the horror sense.
Well, I think it's interesting that he grew up in Texas, because like I'm thinking back to like my own Texas history mm-hmm. lessons, as in just like yeah. U.S. history lessons, because at least in my remembering of being taught in public school in Texas, we would talk about Native American populations, especially like the Cato tribes. But that was like before white settlers, and then they just kind of disappear off. You don't really hear about them ever again in the history classes, except for the Trail of Tears. And that's the only thing you really hear about.
My elementary school is named after like a part of Westward Expansion. I don't want to get too creepy and just like shout out my elementary school so everyone knows where I am. But, so really my like portion of this that they really hammered into us was Sacagawea. Like that was our Native American. It was terrible, probably. It did Trail of Tears. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't remember it if we did.
I mean, we did Manifest Destiny, but it was more of like, we just had to go west. And it's like, so, but what about the people that live there? But we mm-hmm. never asked those questions because like you're a child, you don't know.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
I feel like I learned more about like the Chinese immigrants who were forced to build the railways than I did about the Native Americans.
Yeah.
And the Irish. Yeah.
I think I learned more about ranching, old ranching trails than and old ranching routes than I did about either of those two things.
And that's Texas versus Missouri.
The Texas War of Independence.
Yeah, we did a lot on the Alamo. Taught from a crazy perspective. By yes. The way.
Remember Goliad. Remember the Alamo.
But again, I love the setting too, because like it's called isolation horror, right? Like when part of the horror comes from the fact that the main character doesn't have access to escape. And I think that the Old West really lends itself to horror. I say the Old West. I know the 1912 is like not necessarily like the old.
Like while the rest of the world was gearing up for like the Industrial Revolution of World War One, it was still the Old West out West. Like they did not have, it was a different.
It just became a state
period entirely out that way.
Right. And so I think it really lends itself to horror and to this kind of storytelling, because like things were still kind of a lawless land.
Well, and like what's scarier than a wide open space with no one who knows your name, you know?
Yeah. Or even like, you know, these humps show up and there's no travelers coming through and the sheriff is just some random guy. Like there's not really a way to protect yourself.
No way to get word home to your family or find out who you were. You'll just be bleached bones on the prairie.
Mm-hmm. Treated like the buffalo were treated.
Mm-hmm. I love isolation horror. But only in the reading context of what we've read. Not in the context of, I enjoy a good trail, but usually with a buddy.
Right. Yeah, you will not catch me by myself.
From people, but not by myself.
Yeah,
we're all young women. We know the dangers of being out by ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes, we read the Bright One Young Women book too. Don't worry.
Right. Okay. Well, we've talked about Etsy a little bit. We've talked about Arthur. The native main character who is really driving the story is Goodstab. And yes, he's the most interesting character by far.
The full blood takes no scalps. That word I can't pronounce. The man of many names.
Mm-hmm. What'd you guys think of him?
Weasel plume.
Weasel plume, yeah.
Our morally gray king.
Yeah, so morally gray. He commits some atrocities, but
really that's not even gray. It's pretty much black, but
yeah. Yeah.
Like I said, this was my favorite parts.
Mm-hmm.
Like just the battle of trying to stay who he was and not being able to without like consuming his people and helping them hit their ruin faster was sad.
Mm-hmm.
And really interesting. What was not interesting was when he took like 2 years to heal several times.
That's life. Yeah, I thought he was a really, really great character because you also see him sort of like come to terms with like being a monster, and he really has to think about what he wants to do with that. Like after he first becomes a vampire, he's definitely like reeling and trying to find a way to stay as close to his tribe as he can. And then as time passes, he kind of come to terms with the fact that he's a monster now. And like, how does he want to use this power that he has? And I think the answers to those questions were really interesting in the book because he doesn't apologize for what he's done. And I liked that about him. I liked that he was deliberate with his choices and did what the best he could, even though he was a vampire.
Yeah, I mean, if I don't eat, my body will make me do it anyway, so might as well be selective.
Yeah, right? I like the idea of that, like, he will just lose control. And, like, mm-hmm. It's the survival instinct in you, where it's like, if you are push comes to shove, you will always try your best to save yourself, even mm-hmm. if you're, like, actively working against yourself. I thought that was very interesting. And also, like, you could tell how, like, broken and torn he was about what he was becoming and what he has done. And he feels a lot of immense guilt, even about like killing the beaver and that whole situation with his friends and becoming a cat man. But then he realizes that this system and the white settlers made him what he is and made him a monster. So why not give back what they have made him? And that's when the quote that we read at the beginning is about, where it's like, I'm an undead Native American man. Like, I'm the worst nightmare of America because you are exactly what you have made me.
Yeah. And you can't get rid of him.
Yeah.
It was definitely heavy. I also liked it, like, he sort of finds a philosophy that works for him, where he feels like he kind of balances his new role in the world with also being, you know, his Pikuni roots. Because I think part of his storyline is also where, like, he basically becomes white. Like, he literally becomes white. And it's sort of like he adopts the, like, revenge winner take all mentality of the white settlers, and then has to walk himself back from that to figure out a way to still be Pikuni, like, basically not become white.
Yeah, he, like, becomes an outsider in his own homeland. So he is essentially the same thing as the trappers.
Right.
I also like that the word vampire wasn't used until the very end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that
was just good writing right there.
Because they probably didn't have that word back then, vampire.
I think he alluded to that they did, but he wasn't going to use it.
Yeah.
Which was
vampires are old, old folklore. Like, it goes pretty far back.
Well, and like, it sounded like, you know, this vampire originally came over from the roots of those stories in probably Eastern Europe. So it was interesting.
Yeah. So my favorite part in the story is when Goodstab is battling the Catman, like, just because there's so much in it and there's so much, like, fight and, like, inventiveness and, like, crazy plot twists and stuff. But anyway, I guess that's neither here nor there. The next character is Arthur, who sort of has this descent into madness as Goodstab gets his revenge on him. I will say my one real qualm with Arthur is I felt like his, like, gluttonous desire for sweet treats was supposed to be sort of symbolic for his overall, like, selfishness. And as someone who's an avid lover of sweet treats, I don't appreciate that. I don't think that, I did not think that it was a very well executed parallel. And so I just
felt like, almost wrote it off like his desire for sweet treats is what caused him to start this massacre.
Yeah, because he just wanted
to. I was watching it jump. I was like, wait, how do we go from whispering about pudding to whispering, God will forgive you if you kill them all?
Yeah. I feel like we could have played on the more of, like, those soldiers were starving. They had to find the, like, bad Indians. They had to find the, like, owlbear and their people before they could get food and go back to civilization. So it was more of a desperation move in order to end it quickly so that they can go back and get food. I didn't love the sweet treats thing just because, like, it feels like not a real reason why a person would do that. Mm-hmm. You could have just played off of he was starving, he was cold, he wanted it over quickly. He didn't think of these people as human, so he just chose the easiest mark.
Right. And that's why I was like, because we spend a lot of page count on this man's eating. And look, I think that part of it was just a genuine attempt to, like, recreate the atmosphere of journal entries where people really do, you know, especially in this time period, discuss the mundane details of their lives. Fine.
Sounds like it was the only actual excitement and joy in his life.
Yeah.
So until, like, Goodstab gave along and gave him something else to write about.
Yeah. I was like, enough with the sweet treat talk. Okay. I did not think it was a great analogy or parallel or whatever. In general, I did think Arthur was a good character just because he did seem like the kind of person to me who would do what he did, right? Like,
yeah.
He was
clearly already not very good at being a pastor.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't a pious, holy man. He was just trying to make up for what he did in some weird way where he thought being the clergy would fix it. And obviously it was not helping his conscience, and really was like a terrible way to absolve for that. And he wasn't good at it.
No, he wasn't.
Drinking with the drunks. And why did he know there was a cat in the brothel? And
poor Cordelia.
Yeah. Character. Honestly, yes.
Actually, psych, the white buffalo.
Yes. Oh my God.
I was so sad.
I should have been mad about the people, but I was really mad about the buffalo.
I was mad about the buffalo.
Him dying crushed me. It felt like such a low blow. I was like, oh my God, good stab. And this, and the fucking cat man, please. I can't. Like, that was too far.
He couldn't have anything good in his life.
And it was, you know, his dream, right? His dream to bring back the buffalo and to protect some of the buffalo. And
I mean, he did use them to trample the guy, but honestly, you probably just drove them closer to trappers.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you think about the confession style and also the journal? I'll say part of why I think it was so hard for me to get into this book is because I hate like journal entry novels. Like I always find them difficult to get into. I think they're very difficult to pull off. And this book did not make me think any fonder of them. Like I just wanted to hear from Goodstab. I was like, fuck the journal.
Yeah. No, like I'm not a big fan either. Like I said, I think it was to give the option to have first person POV for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm not an epistolary girl or a journal girl. Like, just lay it out for me. Yeah. I'm simple.
Just switch POVs. Call it a day.
I hate myself for saying this, but just do the time jumps. Everyone else is doing it. We don't need the journal to explain why there's present day and past. All right, just do the time jumps.
I mean, I did like that the confessions had an end, so it built suspense on Arthur's side. And so you understood the growing mania for him as he waited for the next part of the story.
Right.
I like that tension.
You had to listen to Arthur.
Yes.
Yeah.
Arthur going about his mundane life was annoying, but I also liked how the tension of each week he had to hear a new part of the story and then him putting the pieces together like, oh, shit, he's about to kill me because of what I did.
Right. And like, oh, my gosh, he's in the rafter. OK, when he when Goodstab hopped off the crucifix, I was like, what?
Yeah, he was Jesus.
But you're like, oh, this man's hallucinating. No, he's not. He's not.
Yeah.
His descent into madness was fair.
Right. I did really like the way Goodstab chose to conduct this revenge plot. Because like it's so fascinating to me that he chose to tell Arthur his life story.
Almost so he can live with it for these next 173 years.
Yeah, I mean it was also like I feel like he needed Arthur to understand why he was there, which was interesting to me. Like he wanted to hurt Arthur for sure, but it was also like he needed Arthur to understand the grander plot occurring, which was, I think, interesting.
Well, and to an extent, he was confessing in the end, mostly mm-hmm. about the girl he ended up using to defeat the Catman,
mm-hmm.
not the tons and tons of other. Also, I don't think we ever got the count, did we?
No, we never did.
Well, he implies that the count will continue to rise.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, there was a confession in there. Just mostly it was, I think, just scaring the shit out of Arthur.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
but
I
think also, it was like, a confession. Let the white man know what he did.
Right. It was almost like, to me, I feel like part of the message I got from it was like, I'm not hurting you because I want to hurt you, which is crazy because obviously he did want to hurt him, but he was like, I'm not doing this for like petty grudges or like for the sake of doing it. Like I'm doing this because I feel like honor bound almost, like in my role as this like vampire native person to do this. And I need you to understand that I'm doing this like because I'm native and like what you did to these people, not because of just like my own personal hatred. And
he's the protector of his people and his culture, and he feels honor bound to exact revenge and protect his people, and felt that Arthur Bokarn was a hypocrite because he was, and he wanted, he using the form of confessional to show the hypocrisy was very like chef's kiss, like bringing in religion to it and bringing in Christianity to say like, it's very hypocritical of you to be preaching this to your congregation when you yourself have committed quite the atrocities, and keep saying that your God will forgive, but will he? You don't seem so sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess part of like the conversation that it alludes to that we never really like really dig into is both these men are like atoning in their own ways, but like, is there an ever enough good to offset something so bad? You know, it's right. Kind of the underlying like, how do you absolve yourself for something so terrible? Can you?
Right. And that's part of why I think Etsy's role in the story does become interesting, is because like she's convinced at first that Goodstab is going to kill her because she's a descendant of Arthur. And Goodstab says something where he's like, would hurting you hurt him more? Like, to him, there would be not even any point in hurting her. But the fact that he feels that way is interesting because he did kill Arthur's other descendants.
And it made sense at first when he said that, because you still thought Arthur was dead. And then like right after that, you realize Arthur is not dead. And you're like, no, like you could hurt him more, actually.
So I thought it was interesting. I thought the way Etsy was handled at the very end in general was interesting, because I think it gets at that question, Caitlin, of like, when have you atoned enough? Like, when have you done enough? Like, not only as a person who did wrong, but as a descendant of a person who did wrong. And well, it like seems
generational
like,
punishment, generational sin is like biblical, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's an age old question.
And it's hard to answer, right? Like, when have you done enough? Right. And I think the author could have damned Etsy more than he did. He kind of...
Right. That's where I said for horror, I feel like it didn't get the ending it needed, other than he didn't raise his fist to be like, yep, good job.
Right.
If it was true horror, he would have tortured her too, I feel like, for much longer than he did.
But he also made the comment of like, you haven't done anything to me.
Well, also, she was already a failure. Yeah. there was only up to go. So,
yeah. And he did leave her gigantic prairie dog great, great, great grandpa.
Yeah, that's torture enough.
Yeah.
He blew up like, her life.
Good luck.
Think so it does. I feel like it does very interestingly walk the path of like, he allowed her to handle the situation. Like, she was not off the hook for Arthur, but she also wasn't on the hook for him either. It was more like, you're responsible for him now, so you have to deal with it.
Right. And it's like, I mean, okay, here's an example. I got on the ancestry.com last year, and tracing back down one of the lines of my family is, some of them were here at the very beginning, so I know they're not innocent. And one of them, it said occupation slaveholder. Do I like that? Not at all. Hell no. What am I going to do about it? You know, like educate myself, obviously, understand that, acknowledge it. But like, it is a good question. Like, what absolves that? And it doesn't. Like, I live with the fact that someone I am descended from was a slave owner, you know, like, probably more than one person, but that one very definitely.
Right.
I don't know. Like, it's the U.S. is a melting pot of people who have these same, you know, dark family stains behind them.
Right.
I mean, same. Like, I have family in my family tree that literally have the name Stonewall Burris. So That's very Civil War plantation owning people.
Catherine also comes from a family of mob bosses.
Yeah. Not mob bosses, because they're not part of the Italian mob. But I have a very interesting family tree of very poor Irish people and then also very rich English people. So right. There's like a weird dichotomy.
If you're a white person in America, odds are good your family history is stained somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And like where do we fall now? You know,
yeah. Well, I think
the conversation.
I think that's the conversation, but also a great starting point is to be reading books like this and to be atoning. Yeah. Challenge yourself, challenge your worldview and recognize the complexity of history and also like not whitewashing history and actually like allowing yourself to be uncomfortable and in uncomfortable situations and say what's happened in the past is horrible. And the best way we can move forward is to acknowledge it and take steps from there.
Acknowledge, learn, listen to others and their experience. Etsy kind of did the opposite. She kind of went off the deep end real quick.
Yeah. She like decided to kill him pretty quick. And the turning point for her was reading Arthur's own letter that he wrote about the massacre.
Where he went from pudding to God will forgive you if you kill them all so we can go home.
Yeah. I'm cold. I want to go home.
And she was also like so disgusted by him that she needed to kill him. Which I guess is kind of a point in and of itself. Like, if you could interact with your ancestors, you would hate them. Like, they're not.
They would hate me. And that's what I hope for and pray for every day.
Yes. Yeah. I know that my ancestors are so disappointed in me, and I'm so happy about it.
My ancestor would have had me lobotomized stat.
Burned at the stake as a witch.
Which is what I aspire to be.
I was joking. I was like, yeah, our ancestors all hate us. Like, just a bunch of college educated women wearing pants, unmarried, like, owning property, some of us. It's just like, anyway, I did think that message was interesting because it seemed to suggest almost like living with it, like, it's our responsibility to deal with it. Like, it's not the responsibility of Native peoples to deal with it. It was Etsy's responsibility to handle it. And the book didn't make a lot of moral judgment about whatever decision she wanted to make. It just kind of followed whatever her decision was.
Well, like, no Native American, no person who descends from enslaved people owes us a, hey, it's okay. You know, we both have to live with the horrors.
Right.
And that's how it is. And Etsy doesn't get the it's okay because he doesn't raise his fist back to her.
Right.
He just gets the I acknowledge you. Hurting you wouldn't do anything better. Deal with it.
Right. We all have to move forward now.
Yeah.
I will say I did not find the knowledge that Arthur was responsible for the Maria's massacre to be much of a plot twist because the whole time they're foreshadowing his dark past, I was like, well, it's got to be pretty bad. And, you know, in this era of time, I kind of anticipated because one of the main characters is, you know, an Indian that it would involve something like
this.
You
made a comment at some point about returning to the area. So you knew he had been out there before. So there was something out there.
Which is low-key crazy that he went back to that area.
Like, because that's somehow going to atone him is by being a preacher out there for white people.
Right. Like, living in a white village is atonement.
Yeah.
Preaching a religion the people you killed didn't believe in is atonement.
In German.
Yeah.
Think about how many stories the plains hold that will never be told, you know.
Right. It's dark.
It's interesting to think about, which is exactly what this author did in a very twisty way.
Yeah. So the ultimate ending is Etsy dismembers her grandfather. Do you think she and Taz survived? They're like in this snowstorm.
I don't know. What?
The cat better survive.
Yeah, I was about to say the cat better survive.
I don't know if they did.
I don't know either.
Brutal country.
like, were her notes found, or did she publish them?
I don't know. Because
she says, like, if there's another entry, then I survived. But there isn't another entry, so we don't know.
True.
I don't know if I want her to survive.
As an orange cat lover, though.
Yeah, I need Taz to survive.
For Cordelia and Taz.
Yeah. I do want the cat to live. The cat is an unfair, you know.
What if Cordelia was a vampire the whole time and Taz is just Cordelia? Just kidding. Taz is obviously a boy. Is he? Was he?
I'm going to assume yes.
I don't know.
Anyway.
As my orange cat sleeps right there, like 3 feet from me.
You know, gorgeous boy. I think what I wanted to summarize at the end about why I ultimately enjoyed this book, despite having a lot of negative things to say about it, is that I do feel like it helped me understand the weight of losing your entire culture, which we're all white, so I don't want to get too grandiose about it. But a like idea that big is difficult to actually understand the weight of, especially when that's not your cultural history. And I felt sort of like I did in Demon Copperhead, because Demon Copperhead managed to make the opioid crisis feel a lot more relatable to me. I feel like this book managed to translate something to me about the experience of actually like being a victim of this kind of long-term genocide in more like real terms of just like losing the people and the identity that you loved.
Well, and in a very different way, but the same thought process, like Blood Over Brighthaven that we just did the episode before this, mm-hmm. the weight of your entire culture is too much for one person to bear.
Yeah.
So.
And culture is shared at right. a certain point.
Is it culture if it's just you?
Right.
It's heavy stuff we're delving in these past few weeks.
I know. I'm like, we need to read something silly soon.
Yeah. When can we read the cat book?
Do you guys have any other thoughts or maybe a book recommendation?
I'm going to jump on Vampires of El Norte as my recommendation.
That's a good
also
one.
White people infiltrating, but this time it's Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And the vampires are also very unique, I feel like, compared to what we normally see. Less horror, reads almost YA. There's a bit of a romance in there, but still a lot of good cultural commentary.
Yeah, that's a good recommendation.
I'm going to go with Mexican Gothic, because if you like this book, you will like that book, because it's mm-hmm. also gory and a gothic horror.
Cannibalism.
And cannibalism.
Those are good recommendations. I feel like I don't have a better one.
I mean, you've repeatedly mentioned Lone Women.
I know, but I didn't like Lone Women that much, so I don't recommend it. I think what I'm going to recommend, let me see if I can find the title, is A Broken Blade. That is also like indigenous inspired, the author's indigenous, and it is also commentary about conquerors and colonialism and trying to maintain culture,
but in a fantasy world
with some hot famine.
Yeah.
We all need that in our life.
A little bit more spicy and lighthearted, though still serious themes.
Way less.
I would not describe that book as lighthearted.
Yeah, it was pretty serious of a book.
Compared to this, it is.
Yeah, it's a fantasy universe, so maybe
everybody
not
keeps their skin.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Anyway, I think that's it. Please rate and review our podcast if you're still listening. You're a real trooper and we appreciate you. So give us 5 stars. Much love. XOXO. And if you want more content from us, we are at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere, most active on Instagram. And then we have our website, busygirlspod.com, where we also have a bunch of book recommendations and stuff for you guys to look at.
Also, our next episode is going to be interesting, guys. You're going to want to tune in.
Teaser.
Such a teaser.
And much more, but...
we're giving a cliffhanger.
Never before seen on the Busy Girls Book Club podcast.
That's true.
It really is.
Well, with that little cliffhanger, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.